At 5:44, I'm Justin Martin with a special report from KERA News. We're going to bring you the latest on how the coronavirus outbreak is affecting Texas, from people in immigration detention facilities to a small business owner in Dallas worried about taking care of her employees. We'll also take a look at the impact the coronavirus is having on mental health. We start with the latest case counts across North Texas. More than 300 people are now confirmed to have COVID-19 in Dallas County. Officials today reported 56 new cases. The county is also reporting its seventh death, a Dallas woman in her 90s. Denton County is reporting a total of 83 cases, including that county's first death, a Louisville man in his 40s. Meanwhile, Tarrant County is reporting 100 total cases, and Collin County says it has 66. Across Texas, state health officials report about 1,400 cases. Governor Greg Abbott today announced a new executive order that requires airport travelers flying into Texas from New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and New Orleans to self-quarantine for 14 days. The governor says his order is consistent with the guidance of Dr. Deborah Birx with the White House Coronavirus Task Force.
The New York tri-state area is the center of the coronavirus pandemic in the United States. Dr. Birx urged everyone who is traveling from the New York metro area to self-quarantine for 14 days before exposing themselves to the public.
Abbott said people flying into Texas will fill out a form to indicate their quarantine location. Troopers with the Department of Public Safety will follow up with visits. Now to the coronavirus and immigration. More than 38,000 people are detained by U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Medical experts say they're being held in facilities that are tinder boxes for a coronavirus outbreak. Now many are calling for them to be released. KERA's Mallory Falk reports.
Diana has breast cancer. That puts her at a higher risk of getting really sick from COVID-19. But she's not social distancing, wearing protective gear, or keeping hand sanitizer at the ready. She says none of these things are possible because she's locked up in immigration detention. Diana says she was already sick when she arrived here. She doesn't want to end up dying from something else entirely. But she's terrified that might happen. Diana speaks over a muffled phone line from a detention center in southern Louisiana. She's from Cuba and asked that we not use her last name because her asylum case is still pending. She says she can't even take the most basic precaution, keeping her distance from other people, because she lives in a room with about 45 other women.
This is just a public health nightmare waiting to happen.
Alan Keller is an associate professor at New York University's Grossman School of Medicine. He says the conditions are ripe for coronavirus outbreaks in immigration detention centers.
One would be hard-pressed to think of a more efficient system to develop for spreading this very contagious virus.
For one, he says these are enclosed and often overcrowded facilities with limited health care. They're not fully sealed off from the outside world. Guards who might have come into contact with the virus come and go. And detainees sometimes get transferred from one facility to another.
If somebody from another facility who's unknowingly infected is transferred, you're going to get spread of the disease.
Diana was transferred to Louisiana from an El Paso detention center in early March, more than a month after the first confirmed case of COVID-19 in the U.S. A group of more than 3,000 physicians recently sent a letter to ICE asking the agency to release detainees while their legal cases move forward, particularly adults over 60 and people with chronic medical conditions. Renit Mishori was one of the physicians to sign on. She's a professor at Georgetown University School of Medicine and a medical advisor for Physicians for Human Rights. Mishori says ICE doesn't have a great track record when it comes to healthcare.
We have a very recent history of disease outbreaks already occurring, like mumps and chickenpox. We have a very recent history of reporting of medical negligence, of very subpar medical care.
She notes many detainees haven't been accused of any crime except civil immigration violations, and ICE has the authority to release them on bond or parole.
These people are not being incarcerated specifically because they are a danger to our society. So when you're balancing out, should we be holding these folks against the advice of public health experts, it's really important to consider that.
Allegra Love is an immigration attorney and advocate and director of the Santa Fe Dreamers Project. She says the anxiety and confusion most people are feeling right now are only amplified for people in detention.
You're in a cage and you can't do the things that everyone else can do to protect yourself and your body.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement says it's taking steps to mitigate the chance of an outbreak, such as screening detainees when they arrive at facilities and separating those with symptoms of COVID-19 from others. It's also suspended social visits to all detention centers. Still, just this week, a 31-year-old man in New Jersey became the first detainee to test positive for the virus. An employee at a facility in Texas also tested positive. Diana, the asylum seeker detained in Louisiana, says she doesn't see ICE taking action to protect people like her. There's no hygiene, no precaution of any kind, she says, because to ICE, we're not worth anything. Diana's attorney is asking ICE to release her on humanitarian parole. She has a childhood friend waiting to take her in Florida, a place she thinks she has a better chance to survive the pandemic. I'm Mallory Falk in El Paso.
We're going to turn to the impact of COVID-19 on a North Texas business. Last October, when tornadoes ripped through Dallas, a toy store lost its roof and half its inventory. Rebuilding would take it down to the studs, so owners scrambled to find a temporary location and relaunch before the holidays. As KERA's Courtney Collins reports, the threat of coronavirus means the store is now shuttered again for the second time in 6 months.
Just hours before Dallas County's shelter-in-place order took effect this week, the Toy Maven was doing a brisk business in Preston Hollow. Shoppers drove up in their cars, parked outside the store, and placed orders over the phone. The puzzles were really moving.
We have 1,000 pieces.
1,000.
1,000 pieces?
Yep.
All right. So
it wasn't the mob scene you might find at a supermarket. Shelves inside the store weren't bare, but staffers at the Toy Maven were hauling armloads of arts and crafts and jettisoning jigsaws nonstop.
Just from around the world, different landmarks.
Oh, wow. Let me do the landmarks.
Okay.
This past weekend, the store went to curbside sales only. The idea was shoppers could FaceTime with an employee inside to get a look at what was available. Payment would be taken over the phone and toys delivered right to the car. Owner Candace Williams thought it was a creative way to keep germs at bay.
We wanted to protect our youngest, too. If they come in, they immediately want to touch.
The Toy Maven has always been a place where in-store playing was encouraged. Coronavirus put a stop to that. And Dallas's shelter-in-place order, which took effect late Monday night, crushed curbside, too. It's a scramble small businesses are making across the country.
We'll be closed per the directions, but we're just going to try to see what that looks like following the guidelines, yet still helping Dallas families, if at all possible.
Williams says that might mean an employee or two being cleared to ship toys to customers at home. It's difficult to try and figure her way through new restrictions that seem to change by the day. After a tornado forced to move to this temporary spot last fall, though, she's used to looking on the bright side.
It is a little frightening if I slow down enough to kind of think about it, but I am such a Pollyanna. I love her. She's such a great character in a book who always, you know, she's just so positive thinking and tries to find the best in every situation. And I just feel like things will be okay in the end.
Nobody who owns a small business plans on two store closing disasters within 6 months. That October 20th tornado destroyed hundreds of North Texas homes and businesses, even a handful of municipal buildings. Williams says right now she's most worried about taking care of her employees and figuring out a way for Toy Maven to operate in any capacity. While her challenges may seem staggering, everyone is trying to get used to a very new normal.
And there's just no other way to take life's punches other than to look at it, accept it for what it is, and then figure out a plan B and move on. And we're all going to have to do that. We're all going to have to do that for our families, for our communities. And there's just no other way to go about, you know, a situation such as this.
Remembering the wreckage at her store the day after the tornado, Williams amends that statement. She's already used up plan B.
Plan C, Corona. How funny, right? How ironic.
Much like Pollyanna, though, the scrappy optimist who's been delighting young readers since 1913, Candace Williams isn't going to dwell on that irony. Instead, she's going to wrap up coloring books, modeling clay, Lego sets, and puzzles, and do her best to deliver them to stir-crazy kids and parents. I'm Courtney Collins in Dallas.
KERA's On Our Minds project explores how mental health shapes the lives of North Texans. Many people are on edge these days. The question is, what can we do about it? Recently on Think, KEI's Chris Boyd spoke with Dr. Ahmed Raza, a professor in the Department of Psychiatry at UT Southwestern Medical Center, about how we can protect our mental health and help others who are struggling.
What effect does uncertainty have on the way we feel?
If you look at how our fear or anxiety mechanisms are basically biologically designed or evolved, they particularly respond in a very robust fashion to stimuli or events which are new and novel and unpredictable.
All right, well, let's talk a little bit more about folks who already struggled with anxiety or depression or obsessive compulsive disorder or some other mental health problem. Folks who have symptoms of these mental illnesses, even when things are sort of going as expected, do they almost always get worse in a situation like the one we find ourselves in?
I would say that that is very frequently, if not universally, the case. So invariably in those people, the symptoms will heighten, the distress is going to heighten, the impact on their functioning and everyday life is going to increase as this thing progresses.
So what advice are you giving these patients who are, in addition to the real life stress that's happening, are experiencing a worsening of their mental illness symptoms?
In this particular scenario, I think the key thing is monitoring for the worsening, increasing the help that we can provide in terms of the frequency of their counseling or the counseling that is more geared towards addressing their current issues, in addition to addressing their symptoms or the worsening of those. Looking at medication options to draw upon their support system. So there are a number of initiatives that we can take during this time.
What about people who have a loved one experiencing heightened anxiety or depression? How can we be supportive to people in our lives with mental illness?
I think the key thing is to recognize when things are beginning to go worse. And it's not always easy. You know, if somebody comes and complains to you and tells you, that is one thing. It doesn't always happen. It may reflect itself in ways that are more behavioral. It may reflect itself in ways which are resorting to more alcohol use. It may reflect in ways that may have nothing to do with what their primary symptoms are. So I think the key thing is to recognize when it is beginning to affect them. Obviously, support, reassurance, recognizing that what they're going through is to be expected, normalizing that experience to some degree for them, that they're not the only ones who are going through the distress. We all are to varying degrees.
What do we do if we aren't in a relationship with a mental health professional, don't have a diagnosable illness, but are experiencing levels of fear and anxiety that make us unable to sort of function in daily life?
The question is, at what point does it get to be beyond your normal everyday stress or what the situation would warrant? I think the signs for that are typically not only the presence or absence of certain symptoms, but how much distress is it causing in your life? How long does that distress persist? How much is it beginning to interfere with your everyday functioning, be it occupational, family, interpersonal relationships? So I think once it gets to that point, obviously, having some recognition that professional help may be needed is important. And remember, the professional help doesn't have to be long-term. Sometimes we have to get through a crisis, and we can come out perfectly fine at the other end.
That was Chris Boyd talking with Dr. Ahmed Raza. Listen to the complete conversation at think.kera.org. For more on COVID-19 in Texas, visit keranews.org. And catch up on the biggest North Texas COVID-19 news with our new e-newsletter. Subscribe at kera.org/e-newsletters, and it'll be in your inbox each weeknight by 7. At 5:59, this is KERA News.